Greetings and welcome back to our continued series of podcasts on Megillat Ruth, on the study of the Book of Ruth. We are now in Chapter 2, Verse 8, Perek Bet, Pasuk Chet. In the last podcast, we studied the beginning of Chapter 2 of Perek Bet, in which Ruth goes out to the field, and we are introduced to Boaz, and Boaz comes to the field later in the morning and is for some reason struck by the presence of Ruth, asks about her, and is told about her tremendous dedication and work ethic. And now Boaz approaches Ruth. As I mentioned at the end of the last podcast, this dialogue between Boaz and Ruth in many ways parallels the dialogue between Naomi and Ruth that we had in the first chapter. And we will see that there is almost a transference of position that will become much more realized in the third chapter between, from Naomi to Ruth, to Boaz in the relationship with Ruth. In Pasuk Chet, Vayomer Boaz el Ruth. So Boaz speaks to Ruth and he says, Halo Shamat Biti. And notice right away the use of the word Biti, my daughter, which again approximates the way that Naomi spoke to Ruth, both on the road when she was trying to persuade Ruth to leave, and also in the brief two words that she said to her at the beginning of our chapter, where she said, go, said, Lachi Viti, my daughter. She said, Halo Shamat Biti. Now that phrase really means, have you not heard? But have you not heard is a little bit of a bizarre thing to say as the first thing that you say to somebody. And so in this context, it clearly means, please hear what I have to say. Halo Shamat Biti, Al Telchi Lulkot Pesadeh Acher. Don't go to collect in another field. V'gam lo tavuri mizeh, and also don't leave this field. This entire statement of Boaz is very bizarre, and we'll take a look at it. And the pasuk ends, v'choti v'kinim na'arotai, and stay connected to my young women. Now, every one of these phrases needs clarification. But before doing so, we have to stop and put ourselves in the mindset of Ruth coming into the field. From what we know of, Ruth understood that there was a possibility of she, as a poor person, collecting following the harvesters, but she also clearly had no idea that she had such a right. And that is evidenced by her opening remark to Naomi in verse 2, where she said, Asher m'sachein beinav, I'll go and collect in a field after I make nice with the owner. So coming to the field, here she is harvesting. She's following the harvesters and she's collecting after them. And then, later on in the morning, she sees somebody, maybe she does or doesn't know, but it should be fairly obvious from the way that the harvesters interact with him that he is the boss. He is, as we find out later, an older man, and a man probably of some bearing. And she then sees him coming to approach her. And in her mind, she must be wondering, what is he coming to say? Get off of my field, who are you, what are you doing here, etc. Instead, he comes to her, and the first thing he says to her is don't go collect in another field. Now, this must turn things around very quickly for her in her mind, because now, as opposed to him coming and demanding something from her, or exiling her, or throwing her out, instead, he makes a request that she does not, and he prefaces it with kind words, my daughter, and please listen. He says, please don't go collect in another field. Now, at that point, you might argue that she's thinking, oh, he's telling me that I shouldn't be collecting at all. And then he adds, v'gam lo tavuri mizeh. That's why he adds the words, and don't leave here. And as I'm not telling you not to collect anywhere or here, I'm telling you not to collect anywhere else, rather to stay here and collect here. V'gam lo tavuri mizeh. And then he says, v'choti bakin im na'arotai. Similar, and in this way, stay close to my young women. Who are Boaz's young women? So there are clearly two possibilities here. One is that the young women are the regular poor who every season or through this season collect at Boaz's field. The other possibility is that Na'arotai referred to women harvesters who work for him. And we will see in the next couple of psukim which one of those interpretations is likely the proper one. He continues now in Pasuk Tet, Einayich basader asher yiktsorun, v'halach tachareihen. So you keep your eyes on the field that they, and yiktsorun is in the feminine, that they are harvesting, and walk after them. So now we find out that the women referred to, the young women referred to in the previous verse, are his harvesters, which means he has young men and young women harvesting in the field, and there is a Na'ar who is the supervisor who spoke up before, and you should walk after them. Halot siviti atan na'arim levilti nogech. Now, let's first of all translate this literally, and then figure out what's going on behind the scenes. He said, have I not commanded the boys not to touch you? Now, what does this mean? He is, for the second time, using the word halo, which is it not the case? Before it was, is it not the case that you have heard me? Should you please listen to me? Here he says, have I not commanded, which is a rhetorical flair for saying, I have commanded the young men not to touch you. Which young men? Well, clearly these are the young harvesters. And what does this tell us about the nature of these harvesters? These are men who, as we saw before, had God's names on their lips, not name on their lips, and they greeted each other with a beautiful blessing. And nonetheless, they were men who when acting in the field, would not act with the most refined behavior around young women, such that they had to be warned specifically to stay away from Ruth. Now, when did Boaz ever command them to behave that way towards them? Unclear if he said it in the couple moments beforehand, or if he's saying a general statement that his young men know that they're supposed to behave better, or perhaps he's saying that I want you to work in my field, and don't worry, I'll tell the boys, meaning I will, after this, tell the boys to stay away from you. And so at this point, Ruth has been moved up, if you will, two levels. First of all, she's been moved up from somebody who had nowhere to go into somebody who was welcomed into this field. And now, if you will, it's not really a different level, but it's a different level of intensity. She has been moved up to somebody who is not only welcomed in the field, but is really requested by the owner that he stay in the field and given special treatment to make her feel more comfortable, being assured that she will not be harassed or molested in any way. She now gets moved up yet another level. As I said in the last podcast, and again, it was a politically incorrect statement, which almost assuredly means there's some truth to it. The nature that we are familiar with of people who are in chronic poverty is often, not all the time, and there's certainly many, many exceptions to the rule and many other circumstances that could lead to it, but often have a very poor work ethic, which means that they would come to the field, and perhaps come at a later time. They would collect whatever they needed, perhaps for the day, perhaps for 2 days, and then leave. Ruth has clearly demonstrated a whole different kind of work ethic. She's been there diligently since the morning, sitting very little, as the young man who had every reason to disparage her nonetheless testified about her. So now Boaz moves her up to a level of a worker. And a worker clearly has more familiarity and more comfort and more rights in the field than a poor person. Because he says, Vitsamit, when you become thirsty, Vihalachta lakelim, go to the vessels. Vishatit, Measher Yishavuna Ne'arim, go drink from the water drawn by the young men. Which young men? These are the harvesters. And suddenly the world is turned upside down for Ruth. Right now she's a poor foreigner who has no family here, and comes into a field looking for a field where she can collect after the harvesters. She's been collecting for a while, and now the owner comes in, and not only does he beg her not to go elsewhere and request that she stay in this field and stay with his harvesters, and it was to walk right after his own harvesters, but now we move it up where he says, unlike the other poor who come and they leave, and if they're thirsty, they have to bring their own water, we would assume, you, if you're thirsty, you go drink from the vessels and drink from the water that's drawn by the young men, which means, in a sense, she's being served by the harvesters, not just being served up that which they dropped, but served up water that they draw for their own drinking. So now she is sort of been included in the group of the regular harvesters, even though she's coming to collect for herself. This is Boaz's first presentation to Ruth. None of this explains what he's doing. If you're Ruth, you got to wonder, why is he behaving this way? Especially Ruth, with her great humility that we've already recognized and we'll see much greater in her response, must be wondering, why is it that Boaz is giving me all of this favor? And so she responds. The first thing she does is, Vatipol al paneha. She fell down on her face. Vatishtachu artsa, and then prostrated herself on the ground. Now, why is she doing this? So we find throughout Tanakh that a person prostrating himself before another, he can be a sign of subservience, such as Bathsheba or Natan in the first chapter of Kings, coming before David, the old king, and prostrating themselves. That's how you stand in front of a king. Or David in chapter 24, when in 1 Samuel 24, Shmuel Aleph Perek Kaf Dalet, when David comes out of the cave in En Gedi and greets Shaul, whose garment he had just cut the corner off of, so he prostrates himself on the ground in front of him. That's how we behave in front of a king. Besides the worship component of it, there is also another context. Prostrating oneself is also a demonstration of reliance, dependence, and gratitude, as we find in Bereshit Chaf Gimel, Genesis 23, when Avraham prostrates himself before the Hittites, the Bnei Chet, to whom he is indebted for their readiness to sell him a field so that he can bury Sarah. That is what Ruth does here. She's not necessarily showing subservience, but gratitude and a sense of a lowered station before Boaz, and she falls on her face. We would have to assume now that she gets up a little bit to say this next statement. It's a little hard to talk with your face on the ground. Madua matzati chen be'enecha lahakireni v'anochi nochriya. Notice the alliteration. Why? How is it that I have found favor in your eyes? And it's a very solid question, because after all, Boaz has had nothing to do with Ruth. As far as Ruth is concerned, Boaz doesn't even know who she is. Beyond which, Boaz just arrived, which means he hasn't even had a chance to watch Ruth at work. So what is it? Why have you noticed me to have me find favor in your eyes? Lehakireni, to recognize me. Ve'anochi nochriya. The vav here of ve'anochi is not conjunctive, and I am a stranger. Rather, it is in spite of the fact. It's what we call conversive vav, or vav hanigud. We had one in the first chapter. She says, how is it that you are recognizing me and favoring me when, on the other hand, I am indeed a foreigner? Notice the connection between lahakireni, the root lahakir, and nochriya, nechar, a foreigner. It's a play on words. Now, she asks, again, a very simple question. Boaz needs to answer. Now Boaz is going to give a very different kind of presentation, whereas before, he gave her a practical program. Don't go somewhere else. Stay here. Connect to my girls. Follow them in the field. If you're thirsty, go drink from the water, etc. And now, Vayan Boaz Vayomerla. Boaz Vayomerla. And now we have to stop and anticipate. What's Boaz going to answer? What's he going to tell Ruth? And that really comes down to two questions. What is Boaz's real motivation for favoring Ruth and giving her all of this elevated status in the field? And what's he going to tell her? In other words, it may be that Boaz's real motivation is that he finds her attractive. It may be that he feels guilty for not taking care of Naomi, and this is a way to assuage the guilt. It may be that he is on a program to try to promote better relations with foreign people or whatever, and he may not be willing to say that. So we're going to have to anticipate. However, we have a little bit of help if we read the text very carefully, if you will, between the lines. Go back to the first verse in this chapter, Perakvet Pasuk Aleph, and I pointed out that we were given a bit of foreshadowing with the introduction of Boaz before he actually appears. Boaz is introduced here as a family friend of Naomi. And then the question is raised, well, if Naomi has returned to a town where there is some resurgence of the economy, and nonetheless she's impoverished and she has nothing to eat, and obviously no work, she's sitting around without a source of food, then Ruth has to go out to the field. We have to ask, well, if there's a Boaz around who is a Gibor Chayil, he's wealthy, and he's a relative, and he has connections to the family, why isn't he taking care? So we're going to now find how that plays out, but in a way that we might not have expected. And he answers as follows. Vayan Boaz Vayomrila. He answers, Hu gain hu godly, it was told to me, Kol asher asit et chamotech, acharei moti sheich. Everything that you did for your mother-in-law after your husband died. Which means now that when we look back at chapter 1, and Naomi's first words to her daughters-in-law, and she said, God should do kindness with you as you did kindness with the dead and with me. The kindness done with me likely is a reference to how they stayed with Naomi after their husbands died, because that's the same time period that Boaz is referring to. And again, Boaz's statement to Ruth parallels Naomi's statement to Ruth and Orpah. Kol asher asit et chamotech acharei mot eshech, everything that you did for after your husband died. All right, now, huged hugad, that form where you have the conjugated verb and then the participle, huged hugad, which appears many times in Tanakh, is often a sense of surprise. Indeed, unlikely as it were, huged hugadli, I was told, and I was surprised to be told, kol asher asit et chamotech, everything you did for your mother-in-law after your husband died. And then what did you do? Va'ta'azvi avich v'imech, ve'eretz molatech, you left your father and your mother and your birthplace. Va'telchi, and you came to a nation, el'am asher lo yadat t'mo shelshom, you came to a nation that you had not known ever before. T'mo shelshom literally means yesterday and the day before. It is biblical idiom for saying ever in the past. And therefore, as an example, take a look at the beginning of chapter 3 in Yahushua, in the book of Joshua. So, what Boaz is saying is that he recognizes and he knows about all the kindness that she did for her mother-in-law, staying with her after the death of her husband, meaning Ruth's husband, and then following her and leaving everything behind to come to a land that she had never seen before. Now, that phrase, of course, evokes for us the beginning of chapter 12 of Genesis, Perek Yud Bet, or more familiarly, the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha in Breshit, which is the beginning of what we call Sipurei HaAvot, or the patriarchal narratives, in which God speaks to Avram and says to him, Lech Lecha mi'artzecha molatcha beit avicha la'aretz asharecha. Get you from your land, and from your birthplace and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. Right? And the same way here, Ruth, who very much approximates Avraham in so many different ways, especially in the association of conversion and of tremendous kindness, is somebody who was described here by Boaz as someone who left her father and her mother and the Eretz Molatech, your birthplace, to go to a place that you had never known before. To wit, the place that I will show you. And by the way, they are, of course, the same place, which is Eretz Canaan. Now, this also tells us something else. This tells us that Boaz had heard something about Ruth, because the Na'ar, the supervisor who reported to Boaz, this Ruth HaMoaviyah came, been working since morning, didn't give him all of this information. And by the way, there'd be no way or no reason for this Na'ar to know all this information. All he would know is that her name, and she came with Naomi, and that's how she got there. And that's all he reports. There'd be no opportunity that we could see for Boaz to get this information from anyone else in the field, that he would start asking around. And the sense of the text is that he approached Ruth immediately after talking to the supervisor, which means that Boaz had heard about the story before, which again raises the question, why hasn't Boaz done anything? And so maybe this is his opportunity to make up for it. But now he knows not only that Ruth came with Naomi, because that was reported to him, but he says, I have heard, it has been told to me, and evidently this is not this morning, but an earlier time, that she had done great kindness with Naomi, and she had stayed with Naomi, and this is not an orphan girl, this is a girl who left everything behind, and she came to a land that she's never seen. There's all information that is not obvious by looking at Ruth, it's something he had to have prior information about. This means, by the way, that when we look back at chapter 1, we ask the question that we asked when we were studying chapter 1 of why it is that Ruth and Orpah were willing to pick up, and the suggestion is made, always reading the text, well, perhaps they were orphans, that you see quite clearly from this verse that in the very least, Ruth was not an orphan at all, and that Ruth had a father and mother who she could have gone back to that she chose not to go back to. And indeed, when Naomi speaks to them and says, go each of you to your mother's house, the question is, why does she say your mother's house? And the suggestion is made, perhaps she said that because their fathers are dead. Again, we see here that at least in the case of Ruth, the father is alive. At least from what Boaz knows, you left your father, and you left your mother, and you left your birthplace to come to a place that you had never seen before. Good. And then he continues. It was up until now, Boaz is saying that the reason I am favoring you is because you did all of this kindness for Naomi. Boaz at this point, by the way, does not let on that Naomi is a relative of his. Which means it sounds like he's a man of great goodwill who says, you are someone who has performed kindness for one of my landsmen, for one of my neighbors, so I'm going to present you with kindness in kind. And then he continues. Ruth is only going to find out at the end of this chapter that Boaz is related in any way. Yishalem Adonai Pa'olech, God should pay you back recompense in full. Utimas Kotech Shlema, you should have a full payment from God. Me'im Adonai Elohei Yisrael, Asherbat Lachsot Tachat Knafav. You should have a full payment from Hashem, who is the God of Israel, under whose wings you came to take refuge. And that, by the way, is an idiom that is used throughout rabbinic and post-rabbinic literature to refer to a convert. That somebody who converts is somebody who has come to take refuge in God under God's wings, or the wings of the Shekhinah, as it were. And the reason for that imagery is because somebody who converts leaves everything that they know behind, just like Avraham, just like Ruth, because of a powerful belief and ideological commitment to monotheism, to Elohei Yisrael, etc. And I say etc. because everything that implies, and they've given up any other refuge they might have and have taken refuge under God's wings. Notice what Boaz has said. He hasn't said one thing. He said two things. He said, I am going to take care of you. He's explaining his own behavior because you've done kindness for Naomi. And God will pay you back, and that is a blessing that he's giving, a bracha that he's giving. God should pay you back in full, which he did not say about himself. We'll see why in a second. God should pay you back in full because this is the God under whose wings you've taken refuge. And essentially, Boaz is crediting Ruth with two different things. But that starts in the previous verse. Because when Boaz says to Ruth, first of all, I heard about all the kindness that you did for Naomi, that is referring to her interpersonal behavior with Naomi, her kindness, and her dedication. And then he says, and you left everything behind to come to a land that you have never seen before. Yes, that is part of accompanying Naomi, but it is also part of her ideological commitment and pioneering spirit to be willing to leave everything behind and go there. Essentially, she has done two things. He then turns around and says, the kindness that I'm doing for you is in recompense for taking care of Naomi. But God should pay you in full, because only God can pay you in full, and he should pay you in full because you've also done a great connection, a great kindness towards God, as it were, because you have come to take refuge under his wings and leave everything behind. What is Ruth's reaction to all of this? Vatomer, emtzachen be'enecha adoni ki nichamtani. I hope that I find favor in your eyes. You have comforted me. V'chidibarta alev shivchatecha. And you have spoken to my heart. Which means you have spoken in a way that clearly I feel sincerity and a way that really makes me feel good. V'anochi lo eyeh ke'achat shivchatecha. And nonetheless, her humility continues. She says, I am not even like one of your maidservants. And as you're speaking about me as this great woman of kindness and this pioneer and somebody who's willing to leave everything behind, take refuge in God's under God's wings, and I'm saying that I'm not even as worthy as one of your maidservants. Boaz understands at this point that there's no way to try to contradict her and say to her, yes, you really are worthy. That's not a fight you're ever going to win. Besides which, it's possible to read this text as being part of a formal response of being not worthy, as opposed to really expressing her own assessment. Nonetheless, Boaz ignores it, and he continues on with going back to the first theme, which is the practical vein. Vayomer la Boaz, ma'eta ochel. Boaz said to her, now, here is where trope marks, tamei mikra, are very helpful. There's two ways to read this phrase. One would be, Vayomer la Boaz la'eta ochel. Goshi halom v'achalt min alecha, which would translate, Boaz spoke to her at the time of eating, come here and have some bread. The other possible way to read it would be, Vayomer la Boaz, Boaz said to her, La'eta ochel goshi halom v'achalt min alecha, when it comes time to eat, come back, which means Boaz is not there at the time to eat, He's saying to her, when it's lunchtime and all the workers sit down to eat, you can join them also. However, the preferred reading based on the trope, and it is a little bit easier in the words, is to say that until it was time for eating, Boaz didn't say anything. Which, by the way, means something curious. Boaz said what he did. Ruth responded the way that she did. Boaz explained his behavior. Ruth said she's not worthy of such kindness. And then there was silence. And she went back to work, and Boaz went back to doing what he did. And then he approached her at the time for eating, which again demonstrates that Boaz's arrival at the field was somewhere mid-morning between the crack of dawn or the early morning when Ruth arrived and when the main meal, which is around midday, was taken in the field. So at that point, what did he say to her? Goshi halom v'achalt min alechem. Come here, have some of the bread. Which means now she's being moved up even one more notch, which is opposed to being sort of an honored guest of the workers who's allowed to sit and drink water. Now she's even being fed by them. This is something that in no wise was done for the poor who were harvesting in the field. The poor harvesting in the field had to supply their own food, perhaps eating from what they were collecting, and that was it. Goshi alom v'achalt min alechem v'tavalt piteich v'chometz. And you should take your pot, your bread, and dip it into chometz. Now chometz, in Hebrew, and we find it in Tanakh in several places, means vinegar. But dipping pot in vinegar is very strange. So I recall that Rav Samet once suggested that chometz here must mean something akin to hummus, something that we would dip bread into and it would be quite tasty. But either way, it's quite clear he's inviting her not only to eat the very simple subsistence level of bread, but also to have something of a delicacy, in order to have a pleasant meal with the workers. Now, Vatesha Mitzara Kotsrim, what happened? So she sat right next to the harvesters. Vayitzvot lakali vatochal vatisba vatotar. And he grabbed for her, he gave her some toasted corn. This is what Boaz did. Boaz, she sat down next to the harvesters. Boaz handed her some toasted corn. They would take wheat seeds, wheat kernels, and they would toast them on a fire so that they were crunchy and evidently also quite filling. Vatochal, so she ate them. Vatisba, she was satisfied. Vatotar, and she left some over. This, again, is a remarkable statement about who Ruth is. Ruth is somebody who's been starving. Often the case that happens to people who are impoverished and suddenly are given opportunity to have relatively unlimited access to food is they stuff themselves. Instead, what does she do? She eats some. She's satisfied, and so she keeps some over. And she keeps some over because, you know what, there's going to be dinner tonight. Naomi will want something. I'll take some of this home. Vatakom lelaket. And what did she do immediately after she ate? She got back up to continue working, to collect after the harvesters. Vaitzav boaz et narav lemor, gam ben ha'omarim tzalaket v'lo tachlimuha. Boaz commanded his young man and said, let her collect also between the sheaves. And even though that's not where she's normally going to go, she's basically going to follow you, where you pluck the wheat out of the ground, and whatever falls, she's able to pick up. But even between the sheaves, where you're bringing the sheaves to, things that fall, let her collect there. V'lo tachlimah. Don't embarrass her. Don't bother her. Let her collect there, which means that she is going to have an opportunity to collect quite a bit, but she's proven her worth in that.
Also take some of the kernels and throw them down to her. Va'azavtem v'likta v'lotigaruva,
and leave them and let her collect it and don't oppress her, don't bother her about that. So Boaz is now commanding his harvesters to not only allow her free rein in the field to collect elsewhere, but also to drop some of the grain so that she can collect more. He's the boss, you do what he says. Alright, so what we will take a look at in the next podcast on Thursday, B'yitz Hashem, is the end of chapter 2. We will see how Ruth ends her first day and then comes back and how she's greeted by Naomi and what anticipation that conversation will lead us to, and the dramatic shift in Naomi's tenor where she's coming from. But what we have seen over the course of the last 29 and a half minutes is the main body of chapter 2, which is made up of two dialogues between Boaz and Ruth. The first one in which he asks her practically to stay in the field, and she
asks why she's been favored, and then Boaz responds by telling her that he knows about the great kindness that she's done, and also her great connection to Hashem, and as a result, he is going to pay her back, Hashem will pay her back, and then the final piece here is something that is again practical, where he says to her that you should come and eat with the workers, and she does so, but eats like a very refined person, eating what she needs and putting the rest away for later. That is something that we will also do, and we will see you next on Thursday.